Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete.
On today's show, we'll be talking about blind-friendly games and toys. We're going to have fun, and we hope you do too. We'll start out by discussing commercially available games that you can use with or without modification, then some specific games that have been developed with the visually impaired in mind, whether they use Braille or large print, audible features or tactile features. And finally, we'll turn to accessible computer games. But first, to our tip of the week. Having fun is a good thing.
You know, I guess we've always managed to, especially raising a family, have a good time. And entertainment is a big part of that. When you're through working at the end of the day or the weekends come up. And so we were always looking for ways of having a good time that were accessible to me and that I could be involved in. And as Nancy said, there are a variety of just commercial things that can be used just straightforwardly, even if you have some vision issues, or with some slight modifications, you can do a lot of these things.
And we hope you have as much fun as we do. Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll be talking about using commercial games with or without modification. And of course, we need to start with some that are fully accessible right out of the box. Now, our kids are in their 20s, which means that most of our youth-oriented toys are from 15, 20 years ago. But we've got some classics, and we actually managed to find our Bop It. If you don't know what Bop It is, it's this plastic object which has specifically shaped gizmos on various appendages thereof. Each one has a characteristic noise that goes with it, and the challenge is to do whatever it tells you to do. So if it says twist it, you grab the thing that feels like a spiral cone and you give it a twist. And if you don't manage to do that in the allotted amount of time, it lets you know that you've blown it. So here's our Bop It. Oops.
You can hear it keeps going faster and faster, and then every once in a while it says pass it, because it's a multi-person game if you want it to be, and when you're through doing the things that it tells you to do, you pass it on to the next person. This was a great game with the kids because it's kid-friendly at almost any age, and even adults can enjoy it, and it's just kind of a physical, active thing.
Now, Bop It is actually still available for purchase. It's great. You can play it by yourself. You can play it with a whole group of people. It's a fun party game. The more recent Bop Its actually have four or five or six gizmos on them that you do different things to, but they're all very easy to find with or without vision.
So what's the next one you managed to dig up out of our pile of lost treasures down the basement?
Well, I didn't actually manage to find a physical Simon, but we do have fond recollections of playing Simon for hours. Now, the original Simon was the size of a dinner plate, and the on button was in the middle, and around the outside were four very large buttons in, I think one's red, one's green, one's blue, one's yellow, so they're very easy to tell apart visually. But they're always in the same orientation, so if you know where they are, you don't need to see them. And what happens is, in turn, one of these buttons will light up and a characteristic tone will be played, and then it's up to you to tap that button. And if you do the first one correctly, then it gives you two, and if you do two correctly, it gives you three, and it just keeps getting longer and longer and longer in the sequence, and faster and faster and faster. So although you can no longer buy one of these dinner plate size contraptions, you can actually buy a small handheld version, which I would guess is easier if you're visually impaired, because you can just hold it in your hand and use your thumbs to get to the various buttons. And we found kind of a promotional for the mini Simon.
Some things from the 80s are best left in the 80s.
Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down.
But some things deserve to be revived. Simon, the addictive electronic memory game, is now portable. The mini Simon is just like its 80s ancestor, complete with authentic sounds. Press the center button to activate mini Simon, then follow its lead. Simon plays a sequence, and you must repeat it by pressing the four color buttons in the exact same order. Each time you play the buttons correctly, Simon adds one more on the end. Not only does the sequence get longer, it gets faster. It will straight wreck your mind. For all you experts, try memorizing the sounds and playing with your eyes closed.
The other game we used to play quite a bit around the house was a game named Chairs. And essentially what it was a bunch of small plastic chairs, and they were slightly different shapes. Some had little holes in them, and some had legs that were different shapes. And essentially what you were supposed to do was pile these up or stack them on top of each other in any orientation you wanted, and you make this structure sort of higher and higher. And what happens is people take turns. So I would put on a chair, then Nancy would put on a chair, then Brian would, and Allison would, and we'd keep going around until some person put a chair on that made the whole structure topple over. And, you know, at first you might not think that that's a great game for someone who can't see what's going on. But, you know, often people who are used to feeling things are very gentle with their hands. And if you approach the structure from the bottom and just gently go up the top, you could often get a good sense of balance of where the next chair ought to go. And, you know, I think I was quite competitive at that game.
Oh, right? Definitely. The only modification that we allowed was it says quite clearly in the rules that you're only allowed to use one hand as you're placing the chair on top of the pile. Well, obviously, Pete was allowed to use his other hand so he knew where the top of the pile was. But he was good. He didn't cheat and hold it steady.
And it was always fun to hear it come crashing down and chairs go scattering all around the room. The other game that was like that, by the way, was Jenga.
Jenga's kind of the opposite of chairs. First of all, every block is just a simple rectangle. But second of all, you start with this tower of blocks. And then one by one, each person in their turn removes a block. And whoever removes the one that causes the pile to tumble loses that round. But again, you wouldn't expect a blind person to be able to play it. But Pete was quite competitive.
So there's a couple of games that are you know, kind of interesting. You just sit around a table that you can just find it in almost any toy store these days.
Right. And then board games like Trivial Pursuit or Scattergories. You just need somebody to read the questions, and then who cares if you can see? You can participate same as everybody else.
The one I thought was funny was the Ants in the Pants game that I think someone gave to Brian as a present. And this game was sort of like...
It's kind of like Tiddlywinks.
Tiddlywinks, right, where you sort of press some little object and it goes scooting across the room.
And well, it was supposed to land in this bucket that was shaped like a pair of pants, and each of the objects were like little ants. So they called
right.
it Ants in the Pants.
So I remember Brian unwrapping that present. We put it on the ground, and I said, okay, let's play a game. He says, Dad, you can't play this. You have to see to play this. I said, come on, I can play. No, you can't play this. So eventually he acceded to let me play this game with him. And of course,
he shouldn't have, though.
Right. I won the first couple of games, didn't I?
You did.
Oh, well.
But we've been out playing miniature golf. As long as we have a good caddy for Daddy, everything's cool.
Just like the professionals. There are professional golfers who rely on good caddies, and they do fairly well.
Right. Bowling, if you get someone to line you up, or some of the bowling alleys have these rails that you can use. Darts, just don't stand in front of the blind guy when he's throwing the darts, but they do make Velcro darts, and so that's a little safer. So there's no shortage of commercial games you can play with.
Well, the one I liked was the sketch game that we got for Brian, because boys are often interested in, you know, playing catch and things like that. And that's a little bit harder for me. And when the kids are young, they have a hard time catching a ball. But the sketch thing actually had a mitten that was all Velcro, and the ball was Velcro. So he just had to get close to my mitten, and I could catch the ball, and, you know, similarly on his side. So that was a lot of fun when he was younger.
You are listening to Viewpoint.
This week's focus topic is special versions of games and toys that are accessible as purchased. One of our favorite resources is the MaxiAIDS catalog. And although there are many, many places you can buy adaptive aids and gadgets and gizmos, we usually start at MaxiAIDS. So we're going to give them another little plug. Their web address, and they have an excellent, easily accessible website, is www.maxiaids.com. That's MaxiAIDS. Or you can call them at 800-522-6294.
Yeah, but their catalog is great. They have all kinds of these games, as well as other useful things for vision impaired people or people with some dexterity problems or combinations of issues.
So what all have we bought from them? Oh my gosh, we have Braille Scrabble.
So tell them the way the Braille Scrabble works.
Oh, Braille Scrabble's pretty cool. They actually start with what I believe is normally called Scrabble Deluxe. And the board, besides just having everything printed on it, where the double letter squares are and the triple word square and all that, it's actually got a molded plastic overlay on top. And there's a little raised bump defining the outside of every square.
And so when you put those in there, the squares stay where they are, regardless of whether the blind person is feeling the board or not, and you don't mess up the board that way.
Right. Now, in addition, what they do for the Braille version is they mold right into that sheet of plastic the Braille indication of what all the special squares are. So if it's a double letter square, it'll say 2L. Etc., so that the blind person can easily feel where all the squares are on the board.
And then, of course, all the squares are labeled not only in print, but also have Braille markings on
them.
The
tiles.
The tiles. Right.
Right, right. Now, of course, we found out when we got to know each other that I could clobber Pete at Scrabble. But
Nancy likes words.
He could clobber me at chess because he likes strategy.
So we actually found Braille chess. I figured if I was going to play Scrabble with her, she had to play chess with me. And the chessboard is similarly interesting. They make the white squares lower than the black squares, for example. So you know which is black and which is white just by feeling around the board. And then it turns out there are little holes in each of the squares, and there's a peg at the bottom of each piece, like the horse, the rook, etc. So you can stick each piece into a hole on one of the squares. And then the tops, I think, were marked with like a little nail on the top of the black pieces, and then the white pieces were just normal, so you could tell black from white that way. So anyway, after a few games of Scrabble with her, I refused to play because she was winning all the time and clobbering me. And after a few games of chess, she stopped playing with me because she was getting clobbered all the time. So we found other ways to have fun.
Right. But that was symmetrical, but then we didn't have anything to play. And so we figured, well, what the heck? We'll get hold of a Braille backgammon set because neither one of us knew anything about that.
So neither of us play it now because neither of us liked it.
Neither of us got any good at it.
Right.
But you can get all sorts of Braille board games, Monopoly, and all sorts of other things. Obviously, we've got several decks of Braille playing cards. That's good for any kind of card game. And if you don't need the Braille, you can actually buy large print playing cards.
And we've done that for friends, too, who had, could see somewhat, but had trouble seeing the cards in general.
My grandmother, many years ago, when she was in her 80s, she moved into a senior facility. And she loved playing bridge, and she was still quite good at it. But she complained that all those other old people in her senior facility couldn't see the cards well enough to play with her. So we sent her a deck of large print cards, and she was a happy camper. And it's like, okay, we're going to use my deck of cards. And then everybody else could see what they were doing, and she could still play bridge.
The other thing I recall we got for her that we also found in the MaxiAIDS catalog when we were looking for the cards was a little plastic holder. Some of the people playing bridge had trouble holding 13 cards at a time. And so these little plastic holders, you just sort of put the cards in this little holder, and that made it easy to hold your cards. So that was useful, too. And besides the conventional playing cards, we also found Braille cards for other games that were more children-oriented, such as Uno. Uno is a neat little card game that a lot of kids like when they're younger. You match different colors and different kinds of symbols and things like that. And that was fun. We found a Braille version of that that we've used for many years.
You can also find Braille or large print bingo boards and any other accessories you might need, dominoes, crossword puzzles, Sudoku, even in Braille. I'm not sure how that works, but you can get Braille Sudoku.
Yeah, we haven't tried that.
But, you know, a number of our friends, you know, they publish the Sudoku and the crossword puzzle in the newspaper every morning, and for various reasons, they'll slap it on the copier and enlarge it. And then it's a whole lot easier to see what you're doing, whether or not you have a vision problem.
That works. There are many ways to skin a cat, as we keep saying.
Right. Or you can just buy a book of large print Sudoku or large print crossword puzzles.
Or sometimes you can just do it with a buddy. I mean, often when we go to see your folks, they like doing crosswords. We all sit around the table and, you know, kind of work on it all together. And you don't particularly have to see to be able to do that. If someone tells you the hint for three down is this, and here are some letters that are in between, that works.
So, Pete, what's a 10-letter word for a fabulous radio program?
Viewpoints.
Oh, very good.
How's that?
Very good.
Everybody should be tuning in.
And then there are some games that are audible. They put beepers and bells and jingly things right in the object. So we had a football with a bell in it and a basketball with a bell in it and just a regular round ball for playing catch with a bell in it. And that way, as soon as somebody throws the ball, Pete could hear it coming. And then if you want to know where the ball needs to go to, we had a buzzer on the basketball hoop, but you could easily put the same buzzer on the soccer net or the lacrosse net or wherever you were aiming for.
Right. I was just thinking that the people in the neighborhood must have thought there was a car theft going on. There was always this buzzer going, meep, 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 from our basketball hoop.
And then there are tactile games. Pete described our chess set. But we also have checkers that's actually magnetic. Again, the white and the black squares, one of them's raised and one of them's depressed. And so you can tell which set of squares you're putting your checkers pieces on. The individual checkers, our set, the two teams or the two individuals play with yellow and green instead of black and red. But doesn't really matter. One of these sets of pieces is a square and the other one's a circle. And then when you go and king your checker, it actually has an additional raised symbol on top of the corresponding shape, so you know which one's a king and which one isn't. We have a tactile tic-tac-toe game and, you know, huge symbols. So we have a huge black X and a huge white O, and then pegs on the bottom and holes in the board. And you could play that for hours and hours and hours and never have to draw the little tic-tac-toe board again.
You know, the other thing is, on a lot of these games that are made specifically for people with low vision, they may not only have the Braille or some kind of tactile thing on it, but as Nancy said, she talked about the colors of the checker pieces. They're usually made in bright, very visible colors or nice contrasts. So if you do have some limited vision, it does make it a little bit easier to play some of those games.
And in addition to all of these games and toys that we've been talking about, the National Braille Press actually has a site on their website where they list Braille recreational resources. So if you go to www.nbp.org for National Braille Press, and in the search field you type in Braille games, they come up with this list of categories. Just the list of categories is huge. And they've got games, art and art supplies, clothing and jewelry, food, Braille food, if you can imagine, blocks, math, calendars, greeting cards. And we promised my brother we'd mention a Braille shirt he once made for me before we found out about these other companies that'll do it for you. And in fabric paint that was raised, he wrote in Braille across the front of this shirt, "If you can read this, you'd better be Peter."
That was pretty funny.
And I wore that shirt so many times, it disintegrated. And every time I wore it, somebody would ask what it said because, of course, no one else could read the Braille. But we always got a laugh out of it after we told people what it said. Now for this week's high-tech item, accessible computer games. For this item, we turned to Amy Standen from NPR. with an item about computer games specifically designed for the visually impaired. Let's listen.
Video games are a popular holiday gift, but as the graphics improve with each new generation of consoles, video games become less and less accessible to the blind and visually impaired players. Reporter Amy Standen has the story of Sonic games, many developed by blind players themselves.
At first, I didn't even know blind people could use a computer.
Shay Martin was 29 when he started to lose his sight due to diabetic retinopathy. He was a visual effects producer in Los Angeles at the time.
That career was about 9 years in the making, and I was making a lot of progress and getting ready to do a lot of movies and film work, that's when I started losing my vision.
Martin had a few surgeries to try and save his eyes, but within a matter of months, he was completely blind. A longtime gamer who had spent most of his life in front of a computer, Martin went back to what he knew best.
I ran across a program called JAWS. It synthesizes the computer for you, so your computer actually tells you what's going on. 2 years ago, I started teaching myself to program and did a few projects, small shooter games, and then started on Rail Racer and we're just about finished with it.
Prepare to race.
This is Rail Racer, the game Martin developed. There are no visuals in Rail Racer, just sounds. But with stereo headphones on, you can hear everything you need to know.
And away we go. Now there's a curve. The scraping sound you hear is me going too far in the curve and hitting the edges.
Michelle Hinn chairs the International Game Developers Association Special Interest Group on Game Accessibility.
Last year's Game Developers Conference, someone came up to me and they said, wow, could you imagine if someone created a game that you played entirely through sound cues? And we're like, well, yes, we can, because it exists.
Hinn has been lobbying the mainstream game industry for years to open up games to people with blindness and other disabilities. But it's been a challenge.
We would come up to some of these companies and we'd say, hey, did you know this would be really handy for people who wanted to game who had these conditions? And we'd have a look of horror on their faces. They're like, we don't want to be known as an accessibility company.
So for now, blind people exist at the margins of the game world, playing text-based adventure games and audio games like Rail Racer and Enemy Attack, which we're hearing now. Like Rail Racer, Enemy Attack uses stereo sounds to indicate where and how close threats are. It demands a skill most sighted people lack, hand-ear coordination. Here's Ken Downey, who designed Enemy Attack.
If a game says, enemy on the right, shoot him, he's on the right, that's no fun. But if I hear, I'm gonna get you, coming from the right speaker and it's coming toward me, then I know he's there. I can aim right at him and fire.
Audio games have many of the same sounds as video games, guns, helicopters, cars, but Downey has been blind since birth. He's never seen any of these things. Downey says that in his mind, there's no such thing as an image.
I'm thinking about speed, I'm thinking about sound, I'm thinking about all these things. If you were to be blindfolded for a month, you might have a few seconds where you didn't think anything at all about images or pictures, and then you'd be in my world.
Audio games have the same appeal to blind people as they do to those who can see. They offer entertainment, escapism, and the ability to develop new powers. Game developer Shay Martin.
Well, I think the attraction of to fulfill a fantasy, to become something that you're not, to become greater than you are in normal life. And for a sighted person, that might be, you know, become a wizard or fly around on a dragon. Well, the same thing would apply to the blind, I think. In that game, we may be able to do things we can't do in normal life. Drive a car, have a kickboxing match. I think that's the appeal of gaming overall.
Rail Racer, Enemy Attack, and many other audio games can be downloaded from the website audiogames.net. For NPR News, this is Amy Standen.
That program aired in 2006, and in the last 5 years, lots of cool accessible games have been created. And here are a couple of other places that you can find some. Obviously, audiogames.net that she mentioned, and they've got a little tagline at the top that says, because everybody wants to save the universe, which is kind of a nice attitude to have. They've got sites with audio games. They have audio gaming news groups if you want to interact with other gamers, and they have tools for developing audio games. So if you want to get into the fray and try to make up some of your own, they'll be there with some helpful tools. So just go to audiogames.net and click on the link that says links.
And like in that article, if you have some programming skills or want to learn, you know, as Nancy said, you can join one of these news groups, interact with a lot of other people, ask questions, and maybe start developing your own games. In fact, I remember we met some blind high school student a few years ago who we downloaded one of the free Microsoft compilers in Java for him so he could develop his own games, and he was having fun doing that.
He was so excited.
Yeah, Microsoft offers a number of their compilers for free, like Visual Basic, Visual J++, which is Java. So if you know any of those languages, you can get the basic edition or the standard edition of those compilers for free. The professional ones you pay for, but they do have free editions if you want to develop your own games.
We found another site with a half a dozen games on it, rsgames.org/products. And they've got multiplayer versions of Monopoly, Uno, Yahtzee, Blackjack. So if you want to play with other people online, you can do that. And then blindsoftware.com also has a few action-based audio games and a weird arcade adventure game they call Hunter. That's it for this week's show. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking about something a little more serious, Vinix, a fully accessible and easy-to-use computer operating system and associated applications. Besides describing how it works, we'll hear from two of its creators and explain how you can get involved in follow-on improvements, updates, and upgrades. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to reachout@wxxi.org or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. This program was hosted by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show by going to our website at wxxi.org/reachout and clicking on the podcast's link. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.